Louis Blériot, the first person to cross the sea in an aeroplane.
I was the first person to cross the sea from France to England in a heavier-than-air flying machine. I was born in the town of Cambrai, in France, on the 1st of July, 1872. I went to school in my hometown, then in Amiens, and finally in Paris. As a boy, I was especially good at drawing. My ambition was to become an engineer. When I left the famous École Centrale in Paris, I had to join the French army. All young men had to do some military service at that time, and I was a soldier for a year. After that, I took a job with an engineering company in Paris. While I was working there, I invented something new. It was a practical kind of headlamp for the first cars which were appearing in France at that time. In 1897, I left the engineering company and I started a company of my own. I sold my headlamps to famous car makers like Renault. My company was successful, and in 1901, I was able to marry a beautiful woman called Alice Feder. I'd been interested in aviation when I was a student. But during the Great Exhibition in Paris in 1900, my interest became stronger. At the exhibition, I saw a kind of aeroplane called Avion 3. It had been built by an inventor named Clément Ader. That machine didn't succeed in flying, but it made me think about flying machines. My headlamp company was earning a lot of money, so I used some of it to build aeroplanes myself. My ambition was to make heavier-than-air machines which could fly. I wanted machines that didn't need gas inside them. Fortunately, small, light engines had recently been invented. My machines needed engines like that, I thought. One of my first designs, in 1900, was a machine which I called the Ornithopter. I made several of these machines. The Ornithopter had engines, and it was meant to fly like a bird with wings which moved. Unfortunately, none of the machines worked. They didn't work because the design was wrong. The moving wings were a mistake. So next, I started to think about fixed-wing aeroplanes. Perhaps the movement of the air over the fixed wings could keep an aeroplane in the sky. I established a company with a man named Gabriel Voisin. Voisin had already worked on fixed-wing aeroplanes, but they were gliders. These aeroplanes had no engines, so they had to take off from high places. Now we needed to make machines with engines to pull them forward and pull them up into the sky. In 1905 and 1906, Voisin and I built several aeroplanes. By this time, the Wright brothers in America had already flown in a heavier-than-air flying machine with engines. But the machines that I built with Voisin didn't work well. The pilots who tried to fly them weren't happy. They said that the machines were dangerous. I was wasting my money while I was working with Voisin. Soon I left the company and I started working alone again. The result was the first successful monoplane. The monoplane had a single wing. It wasn't like the biplane, the two-winged design that the Wright brothers used. I built several monoplanes, each one with changes to its design. And from each machine, I learned something new. The Blériot 5 model, for example, flew a short distance, but it was unstable and it crashed. But when I built Model 11, I'd solved most of the problems. This model was much more stable in the air. My new aeroplane could fly, but how far could it travel? Could it cross the English Channel, the sea between England and France? This was my ambition. people had flown across the channel in balloons, of course. This had first happened in 1784, but it was the gas inside the balloons that kept them in the air. My dream was to fly from France to England in a heavier-than-air machine. Many people told me that it wasn't possible, but their doubts made me work harder. The English Channel is about 35 kilometers wide at the narrowest place. That isn't very far. But until 1909, it was difficult to keep our aeroplanes in the air for more than a few minutes. However, in that year, I thought that my newest machine could succeed. There was one way to find out whether I was right. There was a good reason to make the attempt then. A London newspaper, the Daily Mail, had offered a prize of £1,000. The money was for the first person whose aeroplane made the crossing. There were two other people competing for the prize. One of them had already made his first attempt. His engine had failed, and he landed in the sea. Fortunately, he was rescued. The other competitor's aeroplane crashed during a test flight, and he was hurt. On the 25th of July, 1909, when I was ready to make my own attempt, I was in pain. I'd recently crashed one of my aeroplanes and burned my foot. The pain was bad, but I decided to fly that day. I took off from an airfield in France at about 4:30 in the morning. I needed to ascend quickly because there were some telegraph wires at the end of the field. I had to get my machine safely above them. My aeroplane had a 25-horsepower engine. Was that enough? I hoped that it was. The takeoff was good, and soon I was flying over the water at about 70 kilometers per hour. But the weather changed, and it was hard to see anything around me. To be safe, I flew my machine about 75 meters above the water. It seemed a long time before I saw the English coast below me. But in fact, the whole flight took just 37 minutes. It was good to see the English airfield ahead of me. The strong wind made it hard to land my machine. I decided to stop my engine and float down to earth. Because of this, I didn't have much control of the aeroplane, and I touched the ground hard. The machine was damaged a little as a result, but I'd succeeded. I'd flown across the channel. I continued to design aeroplanes during the next years, and in 1914 they became much more important. That year, the First World War began. Britain and France both fought against Germany. By then, I was the director of a large aeroplane company, and I had built over 800 machines. Although the technology was still new and there were many crashes, aeroplanes were very useful during the war. I moved my company to England during the war, and I stayed there for some years after it. We built cars as well as aeroplanes. I started several flying schools in England too. But when I was in my 50s, I decided to retire. After that, although I stopped flying, my interest in aviation continued. It was good to see other pilots break records and attempt long flights for the first time. In 1927, Charles Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic Ocean flying alone, and I was in France to welcome him when he landed. And I continued to advise governments about military aviation until my death in Paris on the 1st of August, 1936. In that year, the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale established the Louis Blériot Medal in my honour.